Hey everybody, it's Rick. Welcome back to the Nomad Pastor Podcast. Hey, look, today I want to talk about freedom of religion and the separation of church and state and the level of, you know, social and political responsibility that we have as Christians today, right? I think that I think it's an important conversation, you know, and so we should start with asking a few questions, you know. And the first one is, as a Christian, should we stay out of politics? You know, should we walk away from conversations about politics? Are we, you know, are we supposed to be silent about our beliefs, about our religious beliefs? And, you know, the reason I think it's important that we ask these questions is that, look, times are changing for America, right? The nation that has served as this light of liberty that the world sees seems to be weakening, right? And the country, this is my opinion, it seems that we're weakening down to the very foundations of what our country was built on, right? And there are many Americans who openly express great concerns about the future of our nations and the future of the generations to come. And so I think it's important that we spend some time talking about it, right? Talk about these things today, because I think that as Christians, a vast majority of us get it wrong. You know, we think about how we shouldn't push our beliefs on people, maybe, or, you know, I've heard countless Christians and non-Christians say, you know, there's supposed to be a separation between church and state, right? And they say that because, you know, of the First Amendment, and I feel like a lot of non-Christians have used this to force Christians to be silent. But does it really say that? Does it really say that there should be a separation between church and state? Like, is that how it's worded? And so to understand it, we need to read it, and then we need to look at why it's there and what it all means. You know, so the First Amendment has two provisions about religion. There's the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause. So when we look at the Establishment Clause and what it does, this clause prohibits government from establishing their own religion. So, you know, it historically means that it is prohibiting the creation of a state-sponsored church, which I think is imperative, right? And this was done because, like, one of the main reasons that the United States was founded is that people left England to get away from the state-sponsored Church of England, right? That's one of the main reasons they left. They wanted the freedom. You know, this is exactly what Islam is doing in parts of the world today. They're taking over governments and forcing people to live a certain way of life. I'm sure there's probably others, but Islam is the best example that I have in today's society. And so that's, you know, the Establishment Clause, right? And then the next clause is the Free Exercise Clause. And this clause protects the rights of citizens to practice the religion they choose as long as it's in line with public morals, right? So if for any reason the Establishment Clause or the Free Exercise Clause come into conflict, that's what the federal courts are for, right? That's when the court system has to step in to resolve it. And so I just wanted to, like, that's the baseline, right? That there's not a clear, like, you know, separation between church and state, right? That it's really meant to protect the citizen so that the government cannot create its own church sponsored by the government, right? Now, personally, I have, you know, concerns that the church is failing to fulfill or uphold our responsibility in public and in the political arena for our country, right? That we need to lift our country back up to a level of decency and morality that was designed by the founding fathers, right? Christians, we're supposed to be the salt and light, right? That's what Christ commissioned us to be, in our own personal Jerusalem or Samaria or Judea or the world, right? We can't do that without getting involved in politics, you know? I mean, Christ said in Matthew 22:21, give back to Caesar what is Caesar and to God what is God's. So he's not saying don't be political. He's saying, you know, be involved. You know, I think, unfortunately, a lot of people have misconstrued the meaning that Christians have no place, right? When you say give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, right? I think a lot of people construe that we have no place in Caesar's public arena. But that is far from the reality of what Jesus was saying when he said that. It's clear that he has commissioned us that we are to give of our time, our efforts, and our influence on the things that of God, but also that the actions required for creating a godly government, right? We're supposed to use our influence and our efforts to create this godly government. But today, there are so many Christians in the country that fear their involvement in this political process will somehow make them un-Christian, right? Or that it's outside the realm of their responsibility as Christians. But I'm here to tell you that nothing is farther from the truth. You know, politics is not a dirty word. It's not some spiritual taboo for followers of Christ. We have to be involved. I think God expects us to be involved. He expects that from all of us. And in fact, you know, I think Billy Graham said it best. He said, if America is to survive, we must elect more God-centered men and women to public office, individuals who will seek divine guidance in the affairs of state. I mean, that's pretty clear, right? If we're going to survive, this is what we got to do. So we have to ask what, you know, in the simplest form, what is politics? And I know it may sound crazy, but in its simplest forms, politics is people. You know, it's people who vote. It's people who receive a vote. When you're elected, you become a representative of the people who voted for you. Right? And you're responsible for public policy and you're responsible for the direction of the government based on the people who voted for you. You know, James Garfield, who was the 20th president, said this, and I think it's just as powerful today as when he said it. He said, now more than ever, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it is because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. I mean, that, wow, right? Wow. So if we have people who are corrupt, ignorant, and reckless, it's because we voted for them. It's because we tolerate that. We can't tolerate that. Politics in America, it has to do with its citizens because its citizens, through the elective process, control the government. When we embrace this process, we can bring about change. We can be the salt and light that we are commissioned to be by Christ. I don't know how to explain that any better, you know? But we also have to figure out, what does politics do for us, you know? We see how ordinary people, when they're elected to public office, have this extraordinary power over our daily lives, right? Politics establish the government, and the government through its branches and policies set the rules for how society functions, how society operates. I mean, think about that last sentence. Government sets the rules for how society functions. Look, as a Christ follower, you have a certain set of values that come from Christ. A teaching of how we're supposed to live, right? How every day we're supposed to follow Christ. That's what we're taught, right? We're supposed to try and be more and more like Christ every day that we're alive. And every day we're supposed to grow closer to him. My question to you is, how can we do that if we're not helping drive the way our society operates? If we are too afraid and we simply bury our heads in the sand, how do we help? Are we helping at all? Because I say we're not. We need to stop living in fear. If Christ lived every day in fear of what was going to happen to him, where would we be today? If the disciples that walked with Christ lived in fear every day after the crucifixion, would we even know about Christ today? where would we be? You know, I did a podcast and we talked about, you know, how each of these disciples died, and it was not pretty. But they didn't live in fear. They just walked it. They walked it out. You know, there's numerous scriptures that we can reference about government and why it's important, right? You know, government is needed, right? And it's needed because it's God's idea, right? In Romans 13:1, it says, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Proverbs 29:2, when the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan. You see, good government is God's idea, but we have to be involved for it to be a good government. If we're not involved and we're not voting for Christ-like morals, it's chaos. And I challenge that because Christians have taken a back seat or allowed the faith to take a back seat because we simply want to get along. That's why we're seeing chaos in America. We're seeing a complete lack of morality when it relates to so many things. Just turn on the news, which, by the way, when you turn on the news, it's not really news anymore. It's propaganda. But turn it on and just watch what's happening. There's theft and robbery and murder. These things are at an all-time high. We have people within our government that want to defund the police. They want to take away the very group that's tasked with protecting our freedoms. And they're doing that all while claiming it will allow us to be free. That's why they want to defund it. But it's not. It's not even close to reality. Look, I guess one of the reasons I'm even thinking about this today is that I feel like as pastors today, we need to talk about politics. And we need to use the beliefs we get from Christ to push the way Christians vote. You know, for me personally, I felt the last two presidential elections didn't really matter who we elected because both options were terrible. You know, so what I had to do, because I felt like both options were terrible, I had to turn to my religious beliefs to push the right side. You know, what did I feel was right based on what Christ is teaching me? But some Christians I've talked to decided who they would vote for without even considering their belief systems they get from Jesus. Look, I know that comment's going to rub some people the wrong way. And not everybody voted that way. I get it. It's okay. It's not meant to rub you the wrong way. But I have personally talked to people who claim to be devout followers of Christ that voted what they felt was good for the country because they didn't like somebody. They had nothing to do with their Christian beliefs. And when I challenge them on how they can be walking with Christ and not follow what he teaches, the common response that I get is that standard separation from church and state comment. And regardless how you feel about it, that's a cop-out. It's a cop-out to say, well, it's separation of church and state. If you're voting because you hate somebody, not because of your beliefs with Christ, there's a problem. That's why we're in chaos. In Romans 13, 3 and 4, it says, for rulers hold no terror for those who do right. But for those who do wrong, do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right and you will be commended. For the one in authority is God's servants for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid. For rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. They are God's servants, agents of wrath, to bring punishment and wrongdoer. When the government is ruled by those who do good, law and order prevails. It's period, right? And as God gives them power to bring judgment upon those who practice evil, think about it. You know, we have to be reminded that a good government is God's plan. It's his desire that godly men and women represent us. But godly men and women can't get into leadership unless they're elected. So unless you use the values you're given from Christ, to elect them, that'll never happen. If you don't elect good Christian men and women, they cannot lead us. You know, I said it before that I think we are greatly mistaken by the idea that as God's people, we have no place in political activity, because it is the exact opposite. And really all we need to look at is the Bible and see how at every level there is political activity. You know, God told Abraham that he would be the father of a great nation of people, right? At the beginning, this is a sign of politics, right? He will be the father of a great nation. Joseph was raised by God to become the second in command of the most powerful nation of his time. He was basically the vice president of Egypt. It's politics, right? Moses was the lawgiver. You know, almost every law that is on the books today comes from Moses, comes from the commandments. Again, it's a form of politics. You can look at Isaiah, Jeremiah, and the prophets. They all spoke against politics of their day and called their nation back to God. Look, if we very simply put it, you cannot separate politics from God or the people of God from the government. No government on earth will ever please God unless Christians are part of it. And to be part of it, you must look at how Christ wants us to be engaged. You know, there's this mistaken idea in politics today, and that is that, you know, politics are not spiritual. I know you've heard politicians say, you know, something similar to let me take care of the government, you take care of your religion. But how can we take care of our religion if we lose the rights to practice it? If you lose the right to be Christian, how are you taking care of your religion? And if you're not voting in godly men and women that follow Christ, you're going to lose your right to practice. What good is all of our spirituality if it is taken away from the government? If they strip away our religious freedoms, what good is it? You see, politics are spiritual because it guarantees our religious liberties, right? It guarantees our freedom. And at the beginning of this podcast, I briefly talked about separation of church and state and what it means. But is there truth in the idea of separation of church and state? Is that really possible? And the simple answer is yes, but I don't think it's what you think it is, right? Like I said before, the First Amendment was added to the Constitution, right? And it was added in 1791, along with 9 other amendments, which are now the Bill of Rights. And the First Amendment dealt with denying or prohibiting the establishment of a national denomination. So what it was doing was it was granting the freedom for an American to choose their personal religion for generations to come, right? It stated, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, of abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So while it talks about freedom of speech and all these other things, the first part of it says that it shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So yes, the First Amendment does 100% talk about freedom of speech. But it initially talks that I have a right to exercise the religion freely that I choose. That's pretty strong to me. So when you hear people talk about, well, there's supposed to be a separation of church and state, well, don't try to take away my religious freedom. You know, in 1802, Thomas Jefferson, who was the president at the time, he wrote a letter to the Danbury Baptist Association in Danbury, Connecticut. And the reason he wrote this letter, because he wanted to calm their fear about this, you know, that the government wasn't going to form a national religion. And so in this letter, Jefferson refers to the protection provided by the First Amendment. He says, and this is a quote from the letter Jefferson wrote. It says, "I contemplate with solemn reverence that act of the whole American people, which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Now, that's where we get it wrong, right? Because, you know, this is where that statement comes from, building a wall between church and state. But that's not what he said. He said, I'm not going to, you know, the government can't make their own religion. They can't have a national religion. You know, and there was a Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist that said, the wall of separation between church and state is a metaphor based on bad history. It's a metaphor which has proved useless as a guide to judging. It should be frankly and explicitly abandoned. So here's a Supreme Court justice saying, the way we have used that metaphor, right, separation of church and state is used incorrectly. So stop using it. We should abandon that because that's not what Thomas Jefferson meant. And anybody who's quoting what Jefferson said or saying that we should separate it are quoting it incorrectly. So as we look at this, right, if the process of government is ordained by God, then each and every follower of Christ has a responsibility to be involved in the election of godly people, period. You know, the First Amendment protects this. That's what it does, right? And a perfect example of that protection is, you know, there's like 35 countries that live under Sharia law today, right? It's forced from the Islamic-controlled governments, and you have to follow it, right? They openly persecute and kill Christians for following Jesus because it's allowed. And that's exactly what Thomas Jefferson was writing against. He was saying, no, we're not going to do this. So don't confuse it. I don't know how you feel, but I don't want to be forced to live under some religious law, Sharia law, or any other law that prohibits my ability to follow Christ. So I'm going to wrap it up, you know, and it's simple. Get involved and support candidates that support our Christian values. If the only choice you have are both crabby people, then pick the one who is closest aligned to your Christian values, even if you don't like that person. It's simple. Vote with the values that you have as a Christian man or woman. Vote with the values that you have to follow Christ every day. Hey, it's Rick. This is the Nomad Pastor Podcast. I just want to say thanks for listening and you have a blessed week.